Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Omniverse.
The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program is for mature audiences only. This episode contains discussion of ableism, rape, and violence towards house pets. Please listen at your own discretion. If you find our Stygian story simply scintillating, unlock further secrets at patreon.com/omniversemedia and cthulhumystery.com/support.
We're not just ringing in the Christmas season, we're ringing in the midnight hour here at WYS. The snow is settled on the ground, and under the light of the full moon, the winter landscape is not just literally frozen, but framed like a portrait of itself in still life. Or, at least that's how I left it when I made it to the station this evening. I hope, wherever you're listening to this, you've found some warmth from the night's bitter cold. Unless, of course, you're the gentleman made of snow I passed on Greenflower Street. In which case, enjoy the night air, boys. And thank you for the loan of the scarf. I promise I will return it in the morning. Yes, the seasonal spirit is so palpable that even the cold-hearted snowman is showing kindness to a stranger tonight. And save this radio man's bacon when he left the house in haste. You'd hate to hear me when these golden pipes freeze. Well, tonight... Oh, tonight, the spirit of giving is alive indeed, because tonight it's my pleasure to present another installment of the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program's Cthulhu Cthomentary Arcane Advent. Every Friday in December, they're throwing a log on the fire and discussing the finest in Lovecraftian cinema. Something to keep us all warm as we wait through the long winter between new series of the show. In the prior installment of Cthulhu Cthomentary, Mystery Program showrunner Kat Black had confessed that she'd never seen Reanimator, arguably the most beloved adaptation of an H.P. Lovecraft story ever to hit the silver screen, and the first film to bring together Stuart Gordon, Brian Yuzna, and Dennis Pauly, the team responsible for many classic Lovecraftian film adaptations, including From Beyond, which was the subject of last week's Arcane Advent. Well, now, at long last, Omniverse's Mother Brain will set right this grave oversight and bear witness to this integral piece in the Lovecraftian cinema tapestry. And you are there to hear for yourselves the changed woman on the other side of this experience. She and Keeper Luke Stram are joined in this episode by special guest Doug Banks, who Mystery Program listeners will recall as Hank Jr. in The Black Birth, and you may also know him as one of Omniverse's key creatives, lead storyteller of this series, Kate Was Here, and architect of many cinematic role-playing experiences. It's Doug's first time, too. bathing in the green glow of the reagent. Join them now as they share their findings in Lovecraftian cinema studies and make morbid merriment in this Cthulhu Cthomentary Arcane Advent.
Do you hear that? In the cruel blackness of night, an unknowable evil from beyond time cries out. What dark deeds unfold on the streets of Arkham? And which unwitting souls, innocent or impure, will succumb to the maddening call? The Call of Cthulhu.
Welcome to Cthulhu Cthomentary. Hi, I'm Kat.
Hi, I'm Luke.
And with us, we have a special guest this Cthomentary. It's Doug Banks.
What's up?
We have watched Reanimator, the best-known H.P. Lovecraft film adaptation of all time.
Maybe. I don't know about Color Out of Space now, but certainly this one is known to be a cult movie, like as a cult favorite.
Definitely a high watermark in B-movie comedy horror.
Early high watermark, too.
Yeah.
This is the film that established the kind of pattern and troupe and group of Stuart Gordon, Brian Yuzna, / Jeffrey Combs sometimes, like sort of like stable of Lovecraft film adaptations. And of course, put Jeffrey Combs on the map as a star of camp horror cinema.
Yeah.
Well deserved.
Perfect casting for this movie.
Yeah. Now, while I was on the fence about his performance in From Beyond, as soon as he hit the screen with Reanimator, I got it. I mean, this is a completely different style of performance and one that is highly calculated, and it was immediate. You know, last time I expressed a little bit like I don't really see it. I don't get it. But like this time, oh no. It was absolutely perfect. And his portrayal of Herbert West and the stiffness, the beautiful science boy autism of his characterization of Herbert West is absolutely outstanding.
He loves two things, science and Dan.
At first, he was a little antagonistic, but right at that turning point where he becomes part of the experiment, it's like, oh no, this is our experiment now. We're in this.
Yeah, things escalated quickly once that little like brotherhood of science boys was sort of stumbled into. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we have Jeffrey Combs as Herbert West, Bruce Abbott as Dan Kane, and then Barbara Crampton as Megan Halsey are the three hero leads. Meanwhile, David Gale is Dr. Carl Hill, the lead antagonist and resident pervert, mesmerist pervert Dr. Carl Hill.
Yeah, and depending on which version of Reanimator you're watching, it has an effect on how much of a mesmerist pervert he is. Mm-hmm. He's a pervert in all of them, but some of them that's kind of dialed back a bit. Like it's in the director's cut where you kind of see a little more of that.
Yes, yeah, something that's called the Integral Cut, which came out in 2013. That's what we watched. And it adds an extra like 15 minutes of footage. Everything that's added in just serves
the plot.
Yeah, it serves the plot. It adds in interesting details, and it definitely ups the ante on the film you knew you were watching all along. This is definitely a horror comedy masterpiece. For every issue I had with From Beyond, there was many things to like about From Beyond. Reanimator is start to stop a wild ride that never gets boring, always stays fun, and is consistently gross and weird throughout.
Yeah.
You know, granted, of course, like there's plenty of like horrible, weird, rapey stuff in it, but it also all kind of like everybody gets their comeuppance. It all kind of serves.
It seems to stop short before it really gets bad.
Yeah, it's got like great timing.
It's creepy, but it serves one of the best hero entrances.
at no point does the film, as many horror films are guilty of doing, for some reason seem like it's asking you as an audience member to participate in the terrible things happening on screen.
Yeah.
In Reanimator, you know that these things should not be happening and are very bad.
Yeah.
So
it was able to take the unfortunate trope of rape scenes in B movies and make it truly repulsive.
Obviously, Reanimator is a Lovecraft story. It is kind of considered a novella. It was a bunch of serialized work released in magazines between October 1921 and June 1922.
Kind of in his earlier period, where a lot of stuff at that time was more like weird science than like what we think of like Cthulhu mythos stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was something that, you know, Lovecraft doesn't like a lot of his own material, but apparently this one was something he especially didn't like and just did for the money. He was getting $5 an installment, which I haven't done the math. I usually do the math for on Cthulhu-mentary, but...
Oh, okay. I can do it real quick. What year did it...
21 and 22. So in 1928, $10 was around $100, which is how much Estelle paid for Lot X. So that would be, I don't know what the, you know, 21 to 28, you know, currency difference could possibly be, but basically he's getting $50 a story. So that's fine. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, especially lower cost of living and everything.
Yeah, and down and out Howard Lovecraft.
According to the inflation calculator, it's closer to about $75. Like, here, we'll crank this out.
Yeah, and like he wasn't happy about having to end all of them in cliffhangers, but that's kind of very strongly a part of it. And before I get into how it ties into the movie, just kind of an interesting little side note as to how the story has like a weird connection to Cthulhu Mystery Program. Which is a big chunk of Reanimator, actually takes place in Bolton, which is the town with the tannery. And, and like, that's one of the things is, like, West and his unnamed assistant actually end up, after they kind of graduate and everything, they move out to Bolton because Bolton is a town with a lot of, like, poor immigrants and things working in the mills. They don't have health care because they're poor. So they can give inexpensive health care and they get to see all these people and treat all these people that aren't being otherwise treated, and they have easy access to bodies. But that also slides into the fact that the story version of Herbert West is a bit darker, like, because it's around that time also that the assistant finds out that Herbert has killed somebody to get access to a body. So there's kind of a similar thing of people disappearing from the unfortunate town of Bolton, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely detail. One that didn't come up in Cthulhu-mentary.
Yeah.
Past. So here
I had totally actually forgotten about it until the most recent reread of the story.
Well, your Lovecraftian gears are always turning and the secrets even surprise you sometimes.
Exactly. Also, this is the first time that Miskatonic University shows up in his writings.
Interesting. Oh. I didn't realize this was the first one. Cool. The actual chronology of when his stories were written is pretty fuzzy in my head. So yeah, this plot has many pieces from the short stories, but is definitely not a straight-up adaptation in any regard. The short stories tend to have these pretty significant time jumps. They're very much set in the time and place that that they were written around. There's stuff during World War One and a typhoid outbreak and stuff like that. So this, which is like a contemporary 1980s film, it takes place in and around a hospital and a university hospital specifically, I suppose, is, you know, it's all rather different. But there are actually some significant things that are similar between the two of them. How would you say the characterization of Herbert West differs?
For one, he's definitely a darker character in the short story. Like, by the end of it, he's kind of getting his comeuppance and has kind of crossed too many lines. In the movie, he's a little more sympathetic. Like, maybe he killed that cat, maybe not. But, like, even his one murder in this, when he kills Dr. Hall, it's not for the purposes of reanimating him initially. Like, he hates an uncreative plagiarist.
Who also threatened to kill his friend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, it's not until he's like, yeah, threatening to kill Dan that Herbert's kind of moved to action. So he's much more sympathetic in this one.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that he's clearly not like everybody else. He's very definitely neurodivergent. And a lot of the characters, the other characters, spend a lot of time telling him, sometimes completely unprovoked, that he's crazy. There's plenty of reasons you could say that about him. Plenty. But mostly there's a lot of people just putting him down. And he seems to like, he lets it all slide because he knows what he's doing is important. Or at the very least, revolutionary. And he's extremely single-minded.
There are enough times in this movie where he suggests to do something ridiculous and crazy. But if you give it that split-second thought, you go, he's kind of right. he's like, we have to do this now. Otherwise, you know, whatever. It's like, yeah, the longer you wait, the worse this gets. So maybe he's right. And yeah, they did such a great job of having you on the fence about his motivations for pretty much the whole movie, to where you never fully trust him. And you also never fully think he's a bad guy because there's someone way worse than him.
Yeah.
Which they even joke about. It's like, you're as bad as Dr. Hill. He goes, oh, no, I don't think so.
And considering what Dr. Hill ends up doing,
yeah.
Oh, he's fucking right.
Yeah.
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 Well, and I think that's kind of like a whole extra theme that the movie has that the original doesn't, is that, you know, there's kind of this aspect of like almost like artistic creativeness against this, like, you know, entrenched dull power structure between like the Dean and Dr. Hill.
Yeah, there's a lot of like obsessive patriarchal rigidity.
That
is immediately like the core conflict of the film is about like a person in power who is a like control freak pervert.
Yeah. And also deeply entrenched in maintaining that status quo.
Yeah.
And the moment, you know, West shows up and starts even, granted, he was abrasive.
Yeah. Herbert West is a dick.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He was a dick, but you'd think if someone like Dr. Hall, before you know what he's really like, at first you meet him, he's just a, like, you know, a professor, and he's like a surgeon and supposedly a genius. And when Herbert West shows up and is like, oh, your theories are outdated, whatever, being a dick, true. But you'd think another doctor would be like, well, really? Where'd you get that information? Like, where do you, you know, what information, you know, you're saying that that this is behind the times. Well, what do you got? What's your information? Instead, he's like, I will look forward to failing you. Like, because he won't stand for insubordination. So this is someone who's obsessed with maintaining
it's two kinds of mad scientists meeting one another and both hating each other.
One the regressive control freak, the other the irrepressible. It's the unstoppable force meaning the immovable object is what this is in the mad science realm.
So the unnamed narrator assistant of Lovecraft's story becomes sort of Dan Cain, Bruce Abbott's character, and Herbert West's platonic love interest. And
every opportunity to touch him in this movie. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
No, I'll have to see it again. Yeah, there's pay attention to
there's it. Just so much fraternal affection.
Listen, what is gay about two men coming together to bring life into the world?
and also there's like the intenseness with which like Herbert reacts around like any time that Barbara Crampton's character Megan shows up, he's just like, get out of here. Like, so Dan Cain, I wish there'd been like, I don't know, just a couple more throwaway lines to further incentivize him, because once he sees that the reagent is the thing that actually is real and works, he's in immediately. He's in to a degree that I'm like, okay, you have a backstory that's like pushing this forward. Like, why did you decide to become a doctor?
He doesn't like to give up on patients before they die.
Right. We see that, but there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
There's got to be a bigger reason for it. Like some kind of like, you know,
trauma
backstory thing. Because when he sees that there's an opportunity to bring people back in like that very real visceral way, not just to give somebody an extra boost when they're crashing, but like actually bring life after death, like that changes his entire perspective on everything. And he goes, the degree to which he goes all in on
especially when it doesn't even look that good to begin with. Like, it works, but it ain't quite, you know.
No, it's a mess, and the whole situation with Rupert the cat is very bad. Mm-hmm. But there's something else going on there. There's some backstory that I don't know if it ever appeared in anything, but it's clearly there's more.
Is this movie Pet Cemetery on crack?
Yes.
That's like, I mean that in a positive way. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, the character of Megan Halsey, I wish she had more to work with. She is purely there to be like a victim in most senses of the word. But fortunately, they did give Barbara Crampton like much more to work with in From Beyond. Like, that was like a, you know.
Yeah, I think she's just so game for everything in this. Like, she just stepped into the role like she wasn't even originally cast for it, and then just stepped in, did everything, and then I guess decided, yeah, you're going to be my maniac in the next one.
Yeah.
I mean, and she plays the part well, as like the part as written, you know, just, this is crazy, you're all crazy, like the flying off the handle, like she did that really well. And even the point where we were really laughing, she's constantly interrupting Herbert.
The energy of the hallway scene, where the three of them are talking, and she like gets, and it's like
all
she,
those characters are cranked to 11 in that moment.
she keeps getting pushed aside then flying back into frame, like it's ridiculous. I mean, yeah, she's playing a trope that has like no wiggle room or forgiveness, really. But at the same time, she does it well, and then.
But it balances with what, you know, everyone else is doing in that moment.
Yeah, like, in that moment, especially.
Yeah, it's that kind of movie. It's that kind of moment.
Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now, and more than 60 others, can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program is offering bonus content to Fable and Folly Plus supporters, including character creation and how-to-play episodes, plus cast and crew outtakes, all still entirely ad-free. Fable and Folly Plus. Sign up today at fableandfolly.com/plus.
Comparing it against From Beyond, the movie that followed after that we already watched, where this, I think, is so much of a tighter story. Like, even without all the Reanimator stuff, there's a lot of, like, character elements that would have even worked in, like, some kind of weird, regular medical drama version of this film.
Flatliners, even.
Yeah.
The thing about this is that Reanimator had a lot of work done on it before it ever became a movie. And that's the surprising thing, is that it was originally developed by Stuart Gordon as a stage play, and then along with his two co-authors, they were looking at doing it as a television series. Hmm. And then they were like, look, you're never going to be able to tell a story like this on television. Yeah. Back in the 1980s anyway, haha. Someone should probably try doing it again, I think. So you got to go out to Hollywood and you got to do this as a feature film.
Yeah.
So obviously it worked. He hooked up with Empire Pictures and Brian Yuzna, and here we are. But like, the degrees to which the characters seem to pop, I think, is entirely because they were worked on for years prior to this, yeah. Whereas From Beyond had a very fast turnaround. So, like, this is the much tighter film between the two of them by a lot. While From Beyond has some really cool things that happen in it, the characters were just very calculated at this.
This movie and its budget makes a lot more sense when you pitch it as a adaptation of a stage play rather than an adaptation of a set of stories. You know what I mean? Like, they focus really around three locations for, like, the whole thing. And that easily could be put onto a stage, limited number of characters, practical kind of old school effects that you could do on stage for a lot of it, at least. I can see that now, as opposed to just sort of like, oh, we just really like these stories. Here's a little bit of money. Do with what you can. Seeing how it is fairly streamlined because of that.
Yeah. Now, it was almost rated X, which is why the cuts happened. And there are also some cuts that happened for time. Like the weird detail of Dr. Hill's mesmerism, it's a very strange component, but
it explains a lot.
It does. It makes the third act work really well. And if that was missing, it's kind of awkward the way it comes into the story early on, mm-hmm. in the full, like, uncut version. But without it, the ending would seem so much more abrupt.
And characters would react weirdly, like the dean suddenly the next day being like, I don't like you. And just, you know, there's like, oh, Dr. Hill must have gotten to him. And it's like, what the hell does that even mean? But then when you know the backstory and you see these deleted scenes recut into the film, you're like, oh no, we know exactly how he got to him. We know that this is some mental shit going on.
And the idea of someone being that degree of a control freak and a risk taker on top of everything else makes the way that he dives into, like, seeing that West's stuff actually works. Like, he was writing him off completely because he was so convinced of his own brilliance.
Yeah.
And then once he sees it, he's like, okay, well, I gotta steal it.
Yeah.
Like, but he's also willing to take a leap because he's like, he's not just a doctor. He's a mesmerist. He knows that things are kind of weird.
You know, he's not just a jerk and a tightwad. You know that he has no ethics because of this, and that he will manipulate people and maybe eliminate people to get what he wants. And you can see that earlier as opposed to just sort of discovering it along the way.
They also cut a scene where Herbert is injecting himself with the reagent,
just a little amount, just tiny,
just a little bit,
just
like
a buzz.
Though, admittedly, it looks like it's at least 15 cc's, which is as much as he uses for reanimation of somebody. But
it's got to show up on screen, you know?
Yeah. But the thing is that when he says it, he's like, "Well, I just use it so I don't have to sleep. Like, I just use it to
stay sharp."
Yeah,
yeah. It's a diluted serum.
And once he starts crashing, obviously he has a hard time injecting himself. So Dan's got to do it for him. And one, that's extremely intimate, and I love it.
Yeah.
And two, it's a really fascinating detail of him as a science junkie.
Yeah.
And also offers an explanation that I don't believe they ever take advantage of, because it wasn't in the officially released version of the film, for him showing up again in the sequel.
Yeah.
Because otherwise this movie ends with you thinking he's probably dead.
Yeah. Ambiguous enough.
Yeah.
But
especially for a horror film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, much like the man from the Miami Serpentarium, like the snake doctor who's been injecting himself with cobra venom for his entire life and is now basically unpoisonable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, poison and venom are not the same thing, but anyway.
Immune to venom.
Yeah. Like, any snake can bite him and he's fine. And also he's like, I don't know. He might be dead now. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's a very interesting self-experimentation case study thing. And Herbert is totally doing that to himself. And I would suspect, if your body is adapting to a steady flow of reagent, you might be a little bit unkillable.
Yeah.
That's one of the minor differences between the story version too. Like in the story version, it's very explicitly doesn't like have an effect on a living person. But I think it works in the context of this story as like a change specifically for all that reasons, like to show how absolutely sucked into it is as a part of his own life. And then also for that intimacy of him and Dan together with Dan injecting him.
And I would risk saying that maybe it makes him a little bit more sympathetic because you know that he's not just experimenting on other people like some sort of sadist.
Yeah.
He is a mad scientist. He will even experiment on himself.
Yeah.
Because he believes in what he's doing. You know, that's something.
You know, since so much of our content that is out or is to come regarding Mystery Program is at least a little bit queer in nature, it's interesting to me that because I didn't really know this going into this movie, that like the history of queer Lovecraft adaptations is pretty significant. Like, I mean, there's nothing explicit in Reanimator at all, but it is really, there's an energy about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's like Finn and Poe in Force Awakens.
Yeah. I love that that's like a thing. Like it's like an instinctual thing that happens for some reason. Like Lovecraft is so uptight that even if it's not your intention, it's easy for it to get a little bit gay when someone else touches it.
Yeah. Things are so cut and dry with him that as soon as you add a little bit of chemistry, suddenly it's like, ooh, something's happening here.
So will we be watching the other films in the Reanimator series? I would very much like to. Having watched a trailer for Bride of Reanimator, I'm super interested, and I know that it does tap into material from two of the later chapters of the stories. So like it is still...
So it still technically
it
is like...
Still it calls itself
H.P. Lovecraft's Bride of Reanimator. Yeah. I'm like, there's no way he's still right. And then, but apparently it is?
It taps into it a little bit. At least, you know, as much as this does. Of course, it flies wildly off the handle.
Yeah.
Clearly.
But if there's just a little bit of what he did in there.
It's still tapping into the source material. And it is produced and directed by Brian Usna. So it's weird because it like the whole thing, the fork splits here.
Yeah.
Like Stuart Gordon is the guy who has the habit of intermittently adapting Lovecraft stuff throughout his career. Maybe I'm sure the story's out there somewhere, like where the split happens exactly, or you know, like why Stuart Gordon didn't want to be involved in like any of the sequels or whatever. But I will strive to uncover that before we approach the following movie.
I wonder if that means the third one is just called Beyond Reanimator and not H.P. Lovecraft's Beyond Reanimator.
I mean, they can call it whatever they want. Lovecraft is dead.
Sure. Yeah. Like, just, you know, just the audacity.
I mean, the audacity of any of this at all.
Sure, yeah.
So there's two sequels that were made. There's also two sequels that weren't made.
Oh.
Island of Reanimator and House of Reanimator.
Oh my gosh.
Which I know very little about. But I know that they were, you know, on the table at one point in time. And there's a pretty big gap between Bride and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, more schlock cinema mysteries for us to uncover and plenty more Lovecraft adaptations by this team for us to watch and discuss. That is that for this installment of Cthulhu Cthomentary. We will see you next time.
Plagiarist.
If you've left this conversation awash in curiosity as to what the Mystery Program crew think of this film's sequel, Bride of Reanimator, well, I've got good news for you. Kat, Luke, and Doug all return to learn what further reckless reanimations Herbert and Dan have in store in our next installment of the Cthulhu Cthomentary Arcane Advent. And they've brought another special guest along for the ride. Mystery Program's illustrator of principal characters and forthcoming role-playing tomes, Jared Pope. What's more, a little necrotic bird told me that supporters of Mystery Program not only can hear the Bride of Reanimator episode ad-free right now on Patreon and supporting cast, but also, they've just released a comprehensive dissection of the third film in the series, Beyond Reanimator. Exclusively for initiates. Just head to CthulhuMystery.com/support. That's, of course, also where you can find their discussion of Stuart Gordon's later Lovecraft adaptation, Dagon, and the forthcoming episode on Suitable Flesh, a recent adaptation of The Thing on the Doorstep, written by Reanimator's Dennis Pauly, and likely the last Lovecraftian word from any of this team of filmmakers. All this, and much more, again, at CthulhuMystery.com/support, a portal where you can become a part of bringing new Mystery Program stories to life. Now, It may be the dead of night, but let's see if we can reanimate your feet with this little ditty.
Thanks for listening to the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program. This series is made possible thanks to the generous support of our producers, Amber Devereaux, Becky Scott Bailey, Bob Hogan, CB, Joe Tank Ricciardelli, Josh King, McDribble Deluxe, Miona MK86, Patrick Webster, Sean Hutchinson, Sean T. Red, and our executive Patreon producers, Big Bad Shadow Man, Marcus Larson, and Jamieson Malone. You can join the team at CthulhuMystery.com/support. And if you enjoy this podcast broadcast, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Spotify. The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program is recorded and produced in Orlando, Florida, and Louisville, Kentucky, on land stolen from their indigenous people, the Tamuqua and Seminole, and Shawnee, Cherokee, Osage, Seneca Iroquois, Miami, Hopewell, and Adena. Acknowledgement of the first people of these lands and the lasting repercussions of colonization is just the beginning of the restorative work that is necessary. Through awareness, we can prompt allyship, action, and ultimately decolonization. For links to aid indigenous efforts and to learn more about the First Nations of the land where you live, visit CthulhuMystery.com/landback. Our original score is composed and performed by Ryan McQuinn and Mike McQuinn of Neon Dolphin. Home for all your custom music needs and more, NeonDolphinMusic.com. This has been the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program. Good night.
Omniverse.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Are you there?
I think I'm getting something.
Why are you recording?
For science.
Did you hear that?
We're a little off schedule. Maybe it's the aliens.
I'm studying electromagnetic phenomena and anomalies.
I don't think losing people is scary. I just don't want to do it anymore.
Just together with me.
Radio check. Who's this?
I didn't do it.
You never do anything.
We should still be secure.
Are you safe?
The walkies again.
Who are you?
Comfort.
I am not doing it on purpose.
You can't bullshit.
I am not doing it on purpose.
Stop. Stop.
Oh, God. I don't like this. I don't like this.
What the hell was that?
I'm not supposed to know that. We're supposed to be innocent.
I feel an ending coming.
Oracle, a sci-fi anthology podcast set in the not-so-distant future. Season 2, Transmission, available in bi-monthly episode releases starting July 1st, 2023. Or listen now to Season 1, Iris, wherever you get your podcasts.